through the stories we tell. We provide this one, we believe, on the one here.
Start today with things that happened long before the scripture was read, long before Mary was even thought of. When God led the Israelites out of slavery, the book of Exodus says that the forces of Pharaoh followed them with horses and chariots
to kill who they might and recapture the rest. And when they reached the edge of the sea with no way forward and an army at their backs, God parted the waters and guided the people to the heights on the opposite shore. And when the army tried to follow them, the waters roared back upon them and hurled the horses and riders into the sea. Thus the forces of evil were destroyed, the forces that sought to entrap people again into slavery were forced back. And then the story of Exodus says, and I quote, "The Israelites walked through the sea on dry ground. Then Miriam, the prophet, Aaron's sister, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women followed her with timbrels and dancing. And Miriam sang to them, 'Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Both horse and driver he has hurled into the sea.'" After that bittersweet release, the Israelites walked for 3 days without water in the desert of Shur. And then they came to a place called Marah, which means bitter, because the water there was too bitter to drink. But God showed Moses a type of wood that would make the water sweet and good to drink. Marah is the root of the name Miriam, meaning bitter. The name Miriam quite literally means a sea of bitterness. It's a reminder of the bitterness of slavery, the bitterness of death, the bitterness of the tears of the people who wander in the wilderness, too sorrowful to drink. It is also a reminder of joy. For after the bitterness of slavery and death, there was joy when Miriam the prophet danced with the women of Israel on a hilltop. A reminder that God can turn even a piece of wood into a means of salvation. A reminder of the sweetness of cool water in the barrenness and life of hardship. Miriam the prophet, sister to Moses, sister to Aaron, was a leader of the people in their wandering. There are some really good stories about sibling squabbles in Exodus. The descendants of Aaron became the priesthood of Israel. Thousands of years later, the priests and priestly families of Israel could trace their lineage back to Aaron and Miriam. Even today, DNA studies of the families of the Kohen show common ancestry going back generations. In English, the name Miriam, Mara, is translated Mary. A reminder of bitterness and joy. So about 1,500 years after Miriam danced on a hilltop, the Gospel of Luke tells us about a family in first century Israel. And Luke writes this, "During the rule of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest assigned service in the regiment of Abijah. His name was Zechariah, and his wife was descended from the daughters of Aaron. Her name was Elizabeth. Together they lived honorably before God, careful in keeping the ways of the commandments and enjoying a clear conscience before God." Elizabeth, descended from the very first priesthood of Israel. And Luke says that Elizabeth and Zechariah were childless despite all their prayers. And now they were past the age of childbearing When an angel comes to Zechariah to tell him that Elizabeth will bear a child, and in the sixth month of that miraculous pregnancy, they have a visitor. Mary, or Miriam, was Elizabeth's cousin, thus a descendant of the daughters of Aaron. And Mary, like the Israelites who fled from Pharaoh's army, is also fleeing. She is, the saying goes, untimely pregnant. And this crime, pregnant outside of marriage, outside the clan arrangement, is a crime that may be punished by death. Mary heads for the hills of Judah. Kinswoman Elizabeth would offer her protection. Elizabeth, the descendant of Aaron, and thus a powerful priestly leader in her own right, as well as her husband Zechariah. There's a wonderful writer, her name is Rosemary Berger, and she writes this. What happens when Mary approaches Elizabeth's gates? The baby in Elizabeth's womb leaps and dances in response to Mary's greeting, the same way David did before the Ark of the Covenant in the book of Samuel. And Elizabeth leads the gathered community in a loud song of rejoicing. And she pours out her blessing on Mary and her baby. A sign of Mary's bravery and a radical prophetic hope. Who am I? Asks Elizabeth. She of the priestly lineage, whose family business it was to study the prophecies of God and believe they could be fulfilled. Who am I that I should welcome the one who truly believed that the promises of God would be kept? And Mary, like Miriam long ago, sings in response to Elizabeth's greeting. We call that song the Magnificat. But it is an even more ancient song. The very first record of this song is in the book of Samuel. Hannah sings it when she finds out she is pregnant with an unexpected child. And later Judith sings it when she too finds that she will bear a child she has longed for. Rosemary Berger translates that song this way. With all my heart I make great the faithfulness of God. My whole soul claps with gladness that our rescuer God has come. Why? Because God has taken note of us in our oppression and desolation. And not just us, but generations to come will receive this blessing. For God has made me great with possibility and posterity. The mighty deliverer has liberated us. The God of Israel is God alone and has chosen me, though I have done nothing to deserve it, but lifted my eyes and acknowledged God's name. God's strength has winnowed out the ones who will not lift up their heads and will not say God's perfect name. Instead, God has fouled their perfect plans. Power mongers are yanked off their high horses. The put upon are raised up. The hungry God will overflow with goodness. The stuffed God sends out on the road to beg. The suffering servant Israel God takes up in her arms to remind us how much we are cherished. Just as God promised to our forebears and Abraham and the children of Abraham and Sarah for all time. In the midst of the bitterness of oppression and occupation, the bitterness of fear, the bitterness of life, Mary sings that song of faith. God will throw the tyrants from their thrones and lift up the poor. The opening song of the Christmas story is a political statement. It is not cute. It is not soft or fuzzy. It is certainly not meek or mild. The opening story in Luke's gospel is of two priestly women singing of the overthrow of tyrants and God's love of the poor. Nowhere in this part of the story is there the vision of impossible virginal motherhood surrounded by softly lit cherubs. The song echoes the words of Moses' encounter with God in a burning bush. God says, "Tell the people I have taken heed of their suffering." Rosemary says, "The rabbis tell us that in every generation one is obligated to see oneself as personally having gone out from Egypt. Can we also see ourselves as Mary and Miriam? Can we see ourselves, what Rosemary calls our sanctified imagination? Can we see ourselves as Miriam, the one who bears God to the world through a sea of bitterness? When we sing her canticle, can we take it beyond the walls of the church? Mary, in fear for her life, in expectation of bitterness and hardship, sang for joy. We are protected enough in this place that we are often unprepared for the bitterness of the world." Mary had no such illusions. She did not sing joy, unknowing what courage it would take to keep singing. We must also sing for joy. Take every opportunity to sing joy, knowing that it will take courage to keep on singing in the world as it is, but also knowing that God has taken heed of the suffering of God's people, and that what is to come is as unexpected as a baby who splits apart the world. So, like the community that gathered around Elizabeth and Mary, let us sing joy in the times we can and remember those times when we can't. And so we're going to sing joy.